The Approaching the Natural Podcast with Sid Garza-Hillman. Sid is the author of Approaching the Natural, a health manifesto, a certified nutritionist, health coach, and programs director at the Stanford Inns Wellness Center on the Mendocino coast of California.
Hello, small steppers. Sid Garza-Hillman here, your host of this show. This is the Approaching the Natural Podcast. You guys, welcome. One and all, if you're just joining me, and I do know I have some new listeners, hang here for just a minute. Give this one a try. You'll see it's not kind of your run-of-the-mill podcast, but I hope that you dig it. What do I do here each week? Well, for many, it's a reminder to keep them in the small-stepping mindset, which I will discuss because I do every week. For others, it's informational. For, you know, who knows? For some, it's just that I sound a lot like Tom Selleck. Maybe that could be. I don't know. That's feedback I've gotten. Okay, I wouldn't ever say that I sound like Tom Selleck. That's just a compliment I get from most listeners. Okay, there. I've said it. I meant it. We're moving on. For real, I do come here every week and discuss my small steps approach to living healthier and happier in the modern world. It means that we're here, we're living in the modern world, we're dealing with day-to-day. I find there to be way more similarities between all of us than differences, for sure. The particulars look different, people's jobs are different, and cultures maybe, and traditions maybe, but I find the struggles to be pretty universal. And I am talking each week about the bigger picture of those struggles, not so much the minutiae of top 10 lists of the foods that have the most antioxidants. Those lists are great, and they're definitely helping people get healthier and happier. But what I'm talking about here is the ideas, how you approach your life, what you bring to your life starting today, tomorrow, the things that you can do in moments, more on that in a second, that enhance your life, that add to your life, that remind you and connect you to the life that you actually want to live. This is the big picture stuff, you guys. This is the podcast for big picture stuff. There's a ton of amazing podcasts, because I listen to some of them, that are about more of the particulars of things like nutrition or fitness or exercise or, you know, the specifics of that. And those are great too. And I think this is a good addition to that. There's interview-based podcasts. This, I do one interview, you know, now and then, but it's really not. It's what I've said from literally the first episode. Now we're at 137 that I've done every single week. So there, you know what I've done every week for 137 weeks. This is a philosophy of health and happiness. This is what my book was based on. This is what my practice is based on. I want to get sort of behind the veil on the things like how to eat, how to move our bodies, how to socialize. We are advised on the particulars. Well, eat these foods at this time and measure on this. Well, fitness-wise, you got to hit 20 minutes at zone 2 and you should exercise from this day to this time, and this is what you should do pre-exercise and post-exercise and, you know, everything, how to you know, manage successful relationships. Well, here's the communication tools that you need, everything. And that's all amazing. And we do need those things. This is not a substitute for those things. This is merely a podcast dedicated to helping each of you get in touch with what I truly believe in my heart of hearts, you already know about yourself deep down, which is who you are. I want you to ask the questions that you never have time to ask. Sometimes we don't have the time to ask those questions specifically because we are very, very hyper-focused on the particulars. Well, I've got my list of things that I can and can't eat, and I have these rules and this diet and this timing, and I have to eat this time, and I have to do this thing and keep my metabolism on fire, and I da-da-da-da-da. And I want you to just take the deep breath, take a moment, literally a moment, and say, is this me? Is this how I want to live my life? Is this the person I want to be? Or what I always say, is this the person you already are, but maybe aren't living that way yet? I need you guys to ask that question, because that's what fuels every decision that follows that. When you get clear about the you in this scenario, then the choices that come out of that are going to be more over time reflective of that person. Who you relate to, who you attract, the decisions you make about food, the decisions you make about fitness, the decisions you make about creative pursuits, the decision how you behave at work. It's what emanates from you. It already does, by the way. It's already emanating from you. The question is it you, truly you, or is it the you that's sort of been formed by the world? Are you behaving at work because that your behavior at work is based on the you that is what you were told you are, what you believe you are, based on how society sees you? I'm an overweight person because I'm overweight, and so therefore the overweight person is calling the shots here. Well, I believe that if you're overweight, many of you, maybe not everybody, deep down says, I'm actually not overweight. I'm a healthy person. So what gives that I'm overweight? Well, if you get clear on that, then all of a sudden the thin person that you really are starts calling the shots. Starts calling the shots about what you eat. Starts calling the shots about how you exercise. Starts calling the shots about who you're attracted to and the people that you have in your life. The person that's in you, regardless of how you've been living up to that moment, starts calling the shots. That's what this podcast is about. I need you guys to get there first, or at least there in some substantial amount in your lives over time, so that that's what's fueling the decision to include more of the top 10 antioxidant-rich foods. And that's amazing. And there is a top 10 out there. I'm sure of it. I know that there's a top 10 list somewhere because there's lists everywhere. And they're great. Fine. Good, good, good. But what I've said is the lists never say, okay, and here's how you implement. The lists never say, well, if it fits with who you are, then go for it. The lists go, here's the thing. And if you're not connected to who you are, then you're stressed out by that list and you go, oh my God, I've got to get this every day. I need to include this every day. But I'm not ready to include this every day because I've got culture and tradition and ritual around food. And that means I have to change things and I have to tell my parents and my brother and my sister that I can't eat the way they eat anymore. And I have to do that today because I saw that list and the list said that this is the top 10 foods you have to have every single day. And what do I do about that? Well, I'll just forge my way through. I'll just push my way through at the expense of my health and happiness, ironically, because you're eating more antioxidants, at the expense of your health. What we need to understand, and maybe don't understand some of us, is that food, and I'll talk about food for a second. I'm a certified nutritionist, and if you are just joining me, you will quickly realize how little I talk about food, partly because I'm exhausted by it, except for the hot cocoa, the mushroom hot cocoa. I'm joking. I'm not exhausted by it per se. I just want so bad to liberate people from having to think about food so much. I would like people to not think about food as much as I don't think about food. And it's been years in the making to the point where I don't think about food, and I'm digging it because now that I don't have to think about food at all because I've dialed in a day-to-day, is it leaves me time to do other stuff. That's what I want. But I want you guys to understand this about food. So I'm going to dive in here just for a second. We are so hyper-focused on the things like our calcium and our protein, but And I get this question still a lot of this, like, balance. You know, what about a balanced meal? Well, that's a really, like, antiquated kind of way to think of. If you think about animals in the wild that have very limited diets, they sort of eat what's around them, and they eat, you know, gorillas don't, so they don't go like, well, I'm going to have leaves, and I'm going to put a sprinkle of little berries on there. I'm going to make a little dish. I'm going to make a little concoction of different flavors, and God, it's going to be great. They eat one thing at a time. They don't need a balanced meal per se. They rely on the intelligence of their bodies. We don't do that. This is why my whole approach and the podcast is entitled and my book is entitled Approaching the Natural. We can't live like wild animals in the modern world. Guys, I'm not an idiot. Okay, I get it. But at the same time, I think we can have a mindset, an ethical mindset, and again, I think it's ethics, of recognizing the natural part of us, recognizing the power in us, in our physical bodies, to kind of know what to do if we have the tools to do them. But instead, we micromanage ourselves. We say, I've got to have 30% protein and 30% carbohydrate and 40%. And it's like, woo, zone. Talk about it. You're in the zone. You're in the zone of nutty nut nut. 40, 30, 30, blood type diet. They're crazy. They're not necessary, and they lock us down, and they keep us down, and they keep us need more and more and more. I'm trying to liberate. Okay. the balanced meal thing is a perfect example. Give your body the food, give your body the nutrients, give your body healthy food most of the time. Guess what your body does? It deals with what it needs to, and it takes what it does, and it doesn't what it doesn't, and it gets rid of what it doesn't, and it cleans itself out, and it is able to repair more efficiently. And oh, big surprise, don't micromanage yourself. Okay, what happens when you get micromanaged at work? What happens when somebody's on top of you all the time, micromanaging every step of the way? You can't perform well, can you? It actually causes more mistakes when you got somebody breathing down your freaking neck. That's what the body does. It's like, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with it. I know what to do. Leave me alone. Let me do it. Just give me the tools. I've talked about management, the analogy of management in this podcast before, because the way to properly manage another person in the workplace, in my opinion, is to give them the tools to succeed and give them empowerment so that they can do the things that, you do. And you, there is a level of trust there. There's a level of faith that you go like, I'm going to give you the tools to succeed and see what you can do. And I'll sort of guide the ship and be like, here's the end game. Here's how I kind of want the department to run, but I'm going to give you the tool. I'm going to set you up for success. We don't set our bodies up for success. We set our bodies and minds up for failure. We dive in too big on things and we deprive our bodies of ton of things because we need more protein at the expense of our health, and we suffer the consequences every freaking time. Boom. All right, you guys, you're doing great. I'll see you next week. No, I'm kidding. What happened to the rant? Why did I rant this week? Why did I rant? I'll tell you why. Mushroom coffee. Here's why I ranted. I am feeling... It's been a week now, like over a week, since week and 3 days since the race. I'm like recovered. It took me like a week. I slept Saturday night. I went to bed at 11 p.m. I woke my alarm, not alarm, my just eyes opened at 7:40 the next morning, and just I went It was like doves and just butterflies just flying in my room of peace. I was like, I slept throughout the night. That's how badly I've been sleeping because of the stress, that when I had a night where I literally slept for 8+ hours without interruption, it was remarkable. Literally, like I remarked, I was like, oh my gosh, I actually slept. And it was like a whole nother world. And I realized, wow, for the last month, that ain't been happening. Just waking up in the middle of the night for an hour or two, just craziness. And then just, you know, finally falling back to sleep and feeling exhausted. So part of I'm just going to blame the rant on that I'm well rested. So when you guys are well rested, you'll tend to rant more and just sound like a crazy person. That's the kind of the goal of the small steps way, is get enough rest where you can just make freak people out. I mean, that's kind of where I'm going with this. Sorry if you're just joining me. I kind of went to the conclusion already. Okay. That's what my conclusion is, to make you more nutty nut nut, not less nutty nut nut. Few quick announcements. Wow. Just minutes in, and I'm just I'm going to whip through these, okay, you guys? This episode sponsored, kind of, but it is, but not really, by Health Made Simple. This is a thing that Matt Frazier, the No Meat Athlete, and I did. It's rolling now. If you guys want to jump in on it, go to nomeatathlete.com/health/, and you can sign up for this. It's going really well. Knock on wood. Come in. So far so good. We had one Q&A last week. We have another one. We're doing weekly Q&As right now. If you guys want to get in, get in. It is a meal plan of sorts, but interestingly, it's fully in line with what I was just talking about, which is that it's meant to literally be a jumping off point. It's not a lock in point. We don't do you a new plan every month and you're like, ah, crap, now I got this thing to deal with. It's like, here's the structure. You get to know this by repeating it over and over again, so you don't need it anymore. See, we didn't do a one-off buy it and you're done. We did a year subscription, whether you renew or not. Again, there's no hard sell here. You guys, this is like $8 a month. It's literally like that, okay? And it's to make you empowered, to give you the tools, to move on. To give you the tools to freaking move on. That's the idea. Matt and I are locked in on this. I wouldn't have joined. I've done 136 episodes. This is 137th. I don't do the big sell, you guys. If I'm selling something, it's because I believe in it, because this is the first one I've done in 137 episodes. Got it? Dig. SidGarzaHillman.com is my website. You can go there, put your email address in for a free chapter of my book and to get on my mailing list. Fine. You can donate. I got a really nice donation, a couple donations last week, and people are just kind of throwing me some, you know, it's, I don't, look, whatever you can lay down, okay? It helps me. I got to go to Edinburgh, Scotland. Just got an order for well, you can get this on the website too, t-shirts, mugs, and bracelets, but a guy ordered a mug and a t-shirt in England. I didn't even know they wore shirts in England. I mean, how far have they come along? It's amazing to see that, because, you know, United States happened first, and how we've been able to influence the UK in their newness of as a country. It's very, very inspiring for me to see how we've been able to help them. So now they're wearing shirts and drinking out of mugs. This is a very, very interesting incarnation of sort of where they're evolved. I've been watching the evolution. It's very, 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 very inspiring. Good job, England. You can get a custom signed chapter of my book there too. Okay. Whew, I'm exhausted. Stanford Inn is where I work. I run their wellness center, stanfordinn.com. Got some retreats coming up. Got a running retreat with Matt Frazier coming up. Got a few signups for that in June. If you guys want to get in on that, 10% off. You heard it here first. Mention the Approaching the Natural podcast. Call Stanford Inn at 707-937-5615. Jump in on this retreat, get 10% off. Just tell them. Say, Sid told me 10% off. Boom. There's one in June and October. Okay. I will mention, and Joan and Def have definitely not asked me to do this. Okay. So this is, I'm not making any dough from this at all. Nothing, zero, zero. But they have a cookbook out, and I've kind of not mentioned it that much a couple times, but I wrote a little piece in it. It's very cool. It's like a lifestyle book, but it also has 150 recipes. But it's the story of the Stanford Inn, and it's pretty cool. I'm very proud of kind of my part in it, and obviously I didn't write it, they did, but I'm happy to be part of the whole shebang over there. But anyway, it's called Dining at the Ravens. If you Google or go to Amazon, Dining at the Ravens, there's not another title not like it, so it's just, that's going to be the thing that comes up. Okay, moving on. It's my last bag of mushroom cocoa. I'm totally bummed because I'm heading to New York in a matter of days, 1, 2, 3 more days. I am driving down to a town called a city called Ukiah. I'm driving about an hour and a half there to speak at the hospital there to do my Approaching the Natural talk on May 5th. If you're in the Bay Area and you want to jump up there, fine, go ahead. Go to Facebook. And then from there, flying to New York on the 6th of May to go to the New York Veg Food Fest. That's nycvegfoodfest.com. I think there are still tickets left to that thing. Just join up and get her done. Come see me, will you? Will you just come see me? I'll be speaking on May 8th. I will also be sitting at the Stanford Inn table at least most of the time or some of the time. My buddy Linda Lang will be there too. But I'll be selling books and speaking, sitting at the author's table and that whole shebang. In Edinburgh, August 20th and 21st, I will be at Edinburgh Veg Fest, veganfestival.co.uk. I will be speaking at the, so bad at this, July 29th and 30th in Berkeley. I mean, just, I keep forgetting to put that on the list. But anyway, I will. World Veg Fest, October 8th and 9th, I'll be speaking there. And Atlanta Veg Fest on November 12th. That's atlantavegfest.com, November 12th. Those are my speaking dates coming up, 5 of them. Quickie things. Trail Talk with Doug Hay. I mentioned it last week a little bit, but that podcast, and he did a good write-up on the race. Still dealing with that thing, by the way. The race isn't over. For those of you who know, because guess what I just learned? Because I haven't never been a race director, the job doesn't finish like when the last runner comes in. I'm still doing financials on it, and I had to run let me see my notes here. Let's see. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it says here, the worst running day I've had in years. Sid, my running partner, Sid Ross, who was also the sweeper of the race, is training for 100, and I'm actually pacing her in San Diego. It's the San Diego 100 miler. On June 3rd, I'll be pacing her for the last 30 miles or something like that. Of course, she has me going all night. That's thanks, Sid. So she had a training run anyway, but I'm responsible to make sure that all the course markings are off the course within a week of the race. So I ran the 31 miles the day before the actual race. I ran the entire course. I think I talked about that last week. I did. And so what I really should be doing is not running, taking time off, but instead on Saturday morning, she and I went out for a 16 miler, the last 16 miles of the course, to remove the markings. Absolutely brutal. And I don't mean it was this weird thing where never out of breath, like we were talking the whole time, like it was not like a, we weren't, but every 2 minutes on average, stopping, taking down a ribbon, pulling a flag, carrying the flags, having a pocket full of ribbons. It was the longest. It took us 4.5 hours. It was meant, we were so freaking over it. I can't even tell you how over it we were. It was not pleasurable at all. I can't even now look back and go, but I'm glad I did it. I just could have used about an 8 miler of just ease. And instead, that's what happened there. So anyway, still wrapping the race up, but that's neither here nor there. Okay. New YouTube video. So by the way, all social media, Sid Garza-Hillman, okay? But focus for a second on YouTube, if you will. I'm back in that thing, a little delayed during the race time, just couldn't, you know, whatever. It was just too crazy. Didn't get that far behind, but posted a new one today. It seems kind of, and I'm not locking myself in here, but it seems kind of that I'm posting at like 11 a.m. on Mondays Pacific in the United States, which is like 2 p.m., New York Eastern kind of thing, but and then other areas in the world like England, for instance, whole nother time because they haven't locked up on the time yet. Like they're still developing their method of telling time, and so they're a little far behind. Eventually, they're going to lock up with the United States because we are the leaders in clocks. Okay, can we get to business? Because you guys are just, this is ridiculous. You keep keeping me sort of getting to business. I want to get to business. Got an email from an ex-client who's doing extremely well, and I wanted to cursorily discuss this, okay? And this is with permission and just, you know, so you guys know. It's not like I'm not giving anything personal away. This is a general, for those of you who are building steps lists, okay? And I am working on a thing that's going to hopefully launch later in the year, but more on that in another episode because I'm just bored with my announcements. For those of you who are maintaining a steps list, and for those of you just joining me, that is the work of this thing, is building a steps list, is literally I don't even want to say to-do list because it sort of, it discredits kind of the whole, it makes it sound trite. This is like a life to-do list, not like I gotta go to the market and buy 5 oranges, you know, so it's a steps list. I have one myself. It's, you know, play music, put my hands on my guitar or my ukulele once a week. That's on my steps list. Okay. Deep breath every morning on my steps list and on my alarm. Set an alarm for it. My integrated exercise. These are the things that I have on my list that I do that I maintain most days, most of the time, you guys. Not all the time, most of the time. Okay. What happens with people who are maintaining steps lists, and this happens with the clients that I've worked with and just people that are listening to the podcast, et cetera, is that they're maintaining a steps list and they're building a steps list. It's evolving, it's growing, it's got a kind of a cool thing. Something becomes a full-on habit where they don't have to think about it anymore and it comes off the steps list. Great, perfect, just how it's supposed to be done. Until there's an upset. Until there's a moment that is inevitable in all of our lives, and this is modern world, and if we were living in nature, something happens that changes things. We go on a trip, we have a tragedy, we have a job change, we have a location change. There are life occurrences that throw a wrench in our new day-to-day, and the steps list becomes our day-to-day. The things that are on our list, that's kind of the idea, right, guys? So the steps on our list might be, you know, have a small salad with whatever I eat for dinner, for instance. Okay, well, that's most days good, until the business trip comes. Well, now I'm on a business trip for 5 days. Everything gets thrown to hell. I come back and I got taken out of my thing. What do? I have a family tragedy. I have a job change. Something throws a wrench where all of a sudden the steps list now It was you built it incrementally. You built it over time. Each step is so small that it's like not one deep breath in the morning. Whoop-de-doo. Like every step is like that on the list. Whoop-de-doo. Until you get the wrench. Now you've got to deal with this flood of new stuff that you have to deal with. Let's say it's a job change. You got the new commute. You got the new job. You got the new coworkers. You got the new stuff that you're doing at work. You got the trying to, who knows, all the things that are surrounding a thing that is forced on you all of a sudden. Steps list, you're in charge. Steps list, you incrementally, you adjust and you go back and forth and you kind of build over time and it goes up and down and then you build, build, build. But all of a sudden you've got this thing that just got plopped on your life that takes up an inordinate amount of mental energy to negotiate. It's a new thing. If you move to a new town, you have to do the particulars of living in a new town. Where do I shop? How do I get places? Who do I meet? How do I, you know, the things of living in that place, the logistics of that. They can quickly push the steps list into an area of stress where all of a sudden now, because you're having to spend way more time dealing with where do I shop and where are the things in the market, because now I'm spending 15 times more time shopping for things than I was before because it's all new. Now, all of a sudden, I come home and I look at my steps list, which 2 weeks earlier was kind of totally maintainable. No problem. Get through this. No problem. And now it's a stress. Now I look at that step list and I got 9 things on there and I'm going, ah, crap. Now I got to do this. Now I got to do my steps. And those steps list may be 3 minutes total of all the things that you have to do. But in the context of your entire life, because that's what a small stepper thinks in the context of your entire life, it's a stress. Yeah, you could push through it. You could force yourself through sheer willpower. Matt and I talked about willpower on the last Q&A. It's a finite resource. Willpower runs out. You can't push willpower too long because you will fail. So I can't stress this enough, because of course, if you've listened to me before, you'll know that I talk ad nauseum. To the nauseousness is what that means in Latin. I was vice president of the Latin club at Kingwood High School in Texas. I don't want to, you know, toot my own horn. Perfection and failure. The two things I revisit all the time when I talk about my small steps approach. Why? Because it's what hinders us. And I'm going to get into this big time because this whole episode subject is about this very thing. But I wanted to talk about it real quick by this issue, which is when you get the shakeup, when something happens, and all of a sudden that steps list becomes not normal anymore, but stress, it's imperative to break it down, to decrease it sometimes significantly, to just throw steps right off it, just cross them off. Done. I can't do it anymore. I can't, not right now. Not to throw the steps list away, but to make a big cut, to make a big cut in that steps list. Well, for the last 6 months, I started with a walk around the living room and I moved up to 5 minutes walk, and then that turned into 10 minutes and that turned into a 5 minute jog, and then that turned into a 15 minute jog, and then that turned into a 30 minute jog, and now I'm running 4 or 5 times a week, 35 minutes, but I can't take that off the list. So the alternative is that you're stressed by that work, by that jog. You're stressed by the 35-minute jog all of a sudden because it's been thrown into a spotlight, because all of a sudden there's a ton of other stuff. So again, I'll come back to myself because this is the reference point. Here's how many times I've done integrated exercise in the last 3 weeks. Once, twice, maybe, and they weren't the full amount. I talked about it already. It wasn't the 7 sets that I do. I just took that off the list. Why? Because I didn't need the extra stress. I know, because I'm a small stepper, that it's going to come back. I know it's supposed to be there and I'm going to bring it back. I know that I will. Probably not even this week, because I'm still recovering from the damn 16 miler and the 31 miler. I've been pushing a little bit too much on that. So taking it easy in other ways. Why? Because I'm taking care of myself. That's why. I could do the integrated exercise today. I could push through that. There's no doubt in my mind. I've got the strength and I've got the willpower. But I also have an intense desire to be happy. An intense desire to not be irritable with my family, to not walk in the door exhausted and fatigued because I had to push through 7 stupid sets of push-ups and squats, which most days serve me amazingly well, and I love it that it breaks up my day and keeps me moving even when I'm sitting down. But guess what? Not now. Not now. Next week. And I'm not kicking the can down the road. I've done it. It's on my list. I've done it. I've done it for 11, over a year. Over a year. Literally over a year. About 14 months now. Been done integrated exercise. You think 3 weeks is going to shake it up so I never do integrated exercise ever again? Not. And here's what else I'm going to do. And if you think this isn't easy, if you think this is easy for me, you've got another thing coming. For you guys who have visited this podcast before, you know this ain't easy for me to talk about. But when I bring integrated exercise back in, it's not going to be at full level that it was. I was doing 25 push-ups, 25 squats 7 times a day. I'm probably going to come back in at like 10 or 15. But you got no pain, no gain, Sid. You got to keep piling it on. If I come back, here's what I know because I'm a small stepper. If I come back in at 10 push-ups and 10 squats, maybe 3 or 4 times a day, I'll bet you $1,000 that within a month I'm back up to 25. But I've got to get back in. I've got to get back in somehow. My challenge in my own life and with the and by the way, big picture, remember I said this is a philosophy of health kind of thing. The big picture here, guys, is I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it benefited me. This isn't really about integrated exercise. Must do, like I'm connected to why I do integrated exercise. It's making me feel stronger and it's breaking up my day and infusing some integrated movement that makes me feel energized and really good. So that's, I don't forget that. And because I don't forget that, because that is first and foremost, the number of push-ups isn't really that important. If I can afford to do more because I'm feeling that good, then I add more. But the point is that I want to bring in the value of integrated exercise first and foremost, which is, again, breaking up my day, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, as a small stepper, when I re-engage with that step, it's going to be looking very, very different. Long story short, if you've got a shakeup and this beautiful steps list that you crafted is just rolling, it's perfect. Yeah, I got it. Just firing all in all cylinders. And then you have a shakeup in your life. It's imperative to just hack the crap out of that thing. Just cut, boom, you're out of there. You're out of there. Set them aside. Don't forget them, by the way. Set them aside. Just take that list, put it over there, start a new list of very minimal things. Maybe one thing on there, 2 things on there. Don't throw away the list. Change the list. Bring it back down. That's perfection. If there's perfection in this process, that's what it is, because the big picture, you guys, is you're worth taking care of. Part of worth taking care of is minimizing the stress in your life. The steps list can become stressful. It can become something that you're having a hard time maintaining. That's why it's imperative that you lower that steps list and you maintain your ethic as a small stepper. You maintain your ethic that you're worth taking care of. This is part of that process. If you have something super stressful going on in your life, that's going to be sucking your stress up. If the steps list becomes stressful as a result, why would you want to double that up? Okay? Why would you want to add stress on stress? And when you change a new job, it's like you don't really have a choice in a way of there's just stuff you have to deal with that. Well, the steps on your steps list, probably you could take a break on for a few weeks and just wouldn't be the end of the world. Okay, I had a race to do. I had a date that I needed to get done. I had a meal plan to do. I had a date that it needed to get done. Those were fixed responsibilities that I had to get done. They were time dependent. Doing my push-ups and squats on any given day wasn't time dependent. It was a no-brainer for me to go, not now. When that stuff's done, I'm back in the game. And I am. I'm already back in the game. I mean, it's fine. I'm already, I'm playing music again. That got put on hold because I was traveling. I didn't play music. Well, guess what? I've been playing music. Okay? It comes back. When you're a small stepper and you keep that list active, you'll get there back. It'll come right back. You come back from a trip, cut your list, make it really teeny, get re-engaged. Boom. Next thing you know, a few weeks later, you're back up to the old steps list. No problem because it's who you are. Okay? I'm really glad we had this talk, by the way. Sometimes I have to get practical, okay? I do have a new YouTube video. I don't even know how I got off the subject of my YouTube. Please subscribe to my channel. Go there and subscribe, okay? Posted a new video today. It's called This Is What You Steal. If you guys have heard this podcast before, you've heard me talk about stealing moments. This is the one of the big picture. I keep saying big picture. By the way, The Big Picture is with Kevin Bacon. Great movie. You guys got to go see that movie. It's old. This is, you know, part of the small stepper's way, which is we understand that the world isn't handing us moments. The world isn't handing us time to contemplate and to consider the lives that we want to live. The world is keeping us in a place of fear and a place of weakness. The world is saying you don't have the power to succeed as a healthy person or to maintain a healthy weight, so we're going to design a pill that makes you lose weight while you sleep. The underlying message there is you can't do this. You can't do that. You need this instead. This podcast says the opposite. This podcast says, absolutely, you can do it. This podcast says, you get clear about how you want to live and start taking small steps to be that person who you already are. But it takes time, and it certainly doesn't happen while you sleep. Okay? Getting good sleep is part of that picture. Don't I freaking know it? Okay. Yeah. So go look at that. This, go look at my new YouTube video. Subscribe to my channel. Okay. Is that too much to ask? Really? That's a lot. Okay. It's a 5-minute video. I think you can handle it. A little observation that I made before I get into the subject of this week, but I was thinking about my kids, and I'm a father of three, in case you're wondering. And I've been giving a talk a lot about raising healthy and happy kids, and part of my message in that talk and is of course that it's really more about the parents, and you know, I try to make that funny, but it's not funny. It is about the example that we set, and I was thinking about this with my own children. I'm not here going, my kids are per-. We have the same, my wife and I have the same struggles with our kids that we have with any kids. But I will say that the example we set, I'm noticing, and I don't set the perfect example, but I'm very hyper-focused on the example I set. I'm trying as a person to be the person I truly am deep down. And part of that is a consideration that my kids are going to model that person, for better or for worse. But that's the most profound way that we influence our kids, is by the example we set as adults, parents. And so I was noticing, like in our house, for instance, eating healthy, I don't really struggle with, I don't have to, here's my point. The better example my wife and I set, the better we are in terms of, let's just talk about food for a second, the better our health is, the better food that we eat, the less we have to struggle at all having a conversation with our kids about food. I was just noticing, like, the just another benefit, other than, by the way, having kids that are really, really healthy, which they are, but there's less struggle. There's less stress in the house. The more example I set, the less stress on me, the less stress on my kids. There's no conflict. Education, my kids do well in school. I don't have to, we're not every night going, you got to do your homework. Sit down and do your homework. It's like they see that we work. They see that we went to school. They see that we did well in school. It's just, I don't have to talk about it. I don't really want to talk about it. It's understood. We value education because my wife and I both did that, and it's clear. We don't have to have the conscious, here's what you have to value. It's like we just embody that in how we live our lives. When we are interested in something, we read up on it. We research it. That's what I did to Direct the Race. I started asking questions. Well, my kids see that. They see that I'm reading books and I'm looking up things on the internet, and they know that that's what that is. It's not really a conscious thing. And I think that you can kind of extrapolate that a little bit into the way that we ourselves deal with ourselves, which is the more we focus on the example we set, the more, of course, this is another way of getting around to, the closer we get to who we truly are. And when we do that, there's actually over time, guess what? Less conflict with ourselves, because how we've been living starts to match up with who we truly are. So we eat junk food and we're eating light box food all the time, but we value health and we value being at a healthy weight. And the more we live the example of that, the less junk food we eat and the less light box food we eat, and it starts to lock up, and there's less battle and there's less conflict about that. It truly becomes an expression of who we are. Well, kids are sort of, the way I look at children, so it's an extension of the parents. It's like you're raising these kids and they are modeling you. For better or for worse, guys, if you guys are parents, they're modeling you. You can force them to eat cabbage, but the fact of the matter is, ultimately what they're going to learn is what mom and dad did, or whatever the parental thing is, dad, mom, mom. It's whatever their parents are doing, is what's sinking in, more than what you're saying. Does that suck? Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but the responsibility goes on you. That's how it should be. That's how it freaking should be. And that goes back to what I mentioned earlier, which is the management. It's like, what's the manager? What's the example that manager is setting? What is he or she doing in themselves? Are they showing up on time? Well, if they're showing up on time, then they have much more clout to expect that of the people that work for them, and vice versa. Okay. So anyway, just kind of like the understood things in my household, those things that are understood in my household result in less stress in my household. Just like, yeah, this is what we do. This is who we are. This is what we do. These are the basic values. I embody them. My wife embodies them. The more that we do, the less we have to have discussions with my kids about that kind of stuff. Modeling. Got it? All right. Living the example. We all want to get in people's faces about how we want them to change. And the last thing we want to do is deal with ourselves. If people aren't being influenced by you, if you're not able to influence people, ask yourself why. Maybe because you should be taking care of yourself better. Maybe you should be focusing on who you are and living your life the way you want to live your life. Okay? Maybe. Not to harp on my, you know, YouTube video, which is this is what you steal, stealing moments. Okay? It's one last thing. You guys, if you're just joining me, you may not know this, but back in the day, in the proverbial day, I used to be an actor and I used to make my living acting. And in this new video, I wrote and performed a one act to illustrate my point about stealing moments. I'm not going to toot my own horn per se. I don't want to, you know, I think the word genius is thrown out a little bit too much these days. It's sort of thrown every day. Oh, it's genius. But I dug deep. I'll just put it that way. I don't want to give too much away, but my one act in this video, I dug deep. I got my acting skills back. I just brought them out from the depths. It was like, okay, I got to bring this because this is a YouTube video. I got to take it to the mat. I got to bring out everything I can to emote what I was going through. So I don't want to give it away. I'm not using the word genius about myself. I'm just saying others may use genius to describe my performance playing both parts in a one act play. That's all I'm going to say. Another quick point that I'd like to make. When you do diets or exercise plans, and again, I'm not opposed to them, except that I'm generally opposed to them. Other than that, I'm not opposed to them. And here's why. Here's why I'm opposed to them, in case that just made you confused. When you do diets or exercise plans, in the beginning, I want you to know this fact. In the beginning, when you do a diet, in the beginning, when you do an exercise DVD, what you are in the beginning, in my opinion, is someone who does diets and exercise plans. That's what you are. That's why people, when they yo-yo diet, what they are is not somebody who eats healthy food. They're somebody who does diets, because the diets are what defines your actions. You're a person who diets. You're a person who goes on diets. Even if the diet you start today ends up lasting 5 years or forever, right now you're just a person doing a diet. That's it's not, again, it's going to sound weird because it sounds like I'm being critical. It's just, that's the definition, in my opinion, that's the definition of it. Until you do it long enough, until it becomes you, then you transition to somebody who eats healthy food or whatever that diet is. Even if the diet's not healthy, you eventually transition to somebody who, I'm just a person who eats this food, because it's no longer the diet. It's now you. This is the transition, like I say all the time, of you establishing a new normal, of you changing your most of the time, whatever that is. But make no mistake that diets in the beginning and exercise DVDs are what those are. Diets and exercise DVDs. You are not in the beginning somebody who exercises most days, unless maybe you are, but let's say you're just starting this out and you're starting from scratch, or eating this way most days. I eat this way most days. No, you're following a diet and that's what you're doing when you're doing it. It's fine. And I, like I said, if it's a jumping point to get you into this kind of thing and you kind of come in at it with that small step ethic to say, I'm going to try this as an experiment to see if I like this way of eating, but I'm not stupid. I know that it's not going to make me happy and healthy long term unless I actually go through the struggle, whoa, of incorporating this long term as a true behavior change and becoming this person fully. Then I'm a person who eats this way. I'm a person who exercises this way. But in the beginning, you're a person who is on a diet. You're a person who's following a DVD plan. There's nothing wrong with that at all, except when we start to fake it in a way to say, this is who I am. I'm a thin person. Well, after 21 days, no, you're not. You got thin doing a diet, but you're a person who diets. 5 years down the line, you're still at a healthy weight, eating healthy food. You don't even have to ask the question, who I am. You're there. You're doing it. You're doing it. That's who you are. You run, you exercise, you bike, you dance, whatever you're doing. This is what I do. Yeah, I learned this because I did a plan early on. I learned it by taking a course, or I learned it by following these DVDs. And in doing that, I found this exercise that I absolutely love. And then I just started doing it. And now I just do it. That's when the happiness comes. That's when the you of this picture emerges. And it's not 5 years, it's whatever time that is, but in the beginning, it's like those are great jumping off points. But again, I have to mention this one thing. So there is, you guys all know this show. I'm gonna act like it, nobody knows. There's the show called The Biggest Loser, right? So of course, CNN has this article about The Biggest Loser, I can't remember her name, Annie or something like that, who was like one of the most successful Big Loser candidates. Contestant, she lost all this weight, which makes sense because it's called The Biggest Loser. She was successful because she lost weight, whereas a lot of the other ones didn't, and they were, you know. And guess what? She gained the weight back. Now, I don't know the success rate. I'm kind of talking out of my ass here about The Biggest Loser. I haven't read the statistics. Why? Because I think that show is freaking ridiculous. But what caught my eye about this article, and it's not like I've never seen somebody lose a bunch of weight and gain a bunch of weight back. Duh. What caught my eye about this article is that she's embarrassed. What caught my eye about this article is that she's ashamed that she gained the weight back. And I just want to make this point, a couple points. One, she was never set up for success. She was never set up for success. If she happened to have succeeded, it would have been a freaking luck of the stars. Because it's not how it works. The Biggest Loser is a team of people. It's camera crews. It's crafted. It's Hollywood. It's fake. If you think reality TV shows are just turn on a camera, let it roll, it's not. I know people who are in the business when I used to be down there. It's crafted and directed, and they get what they need to make a story. Otherwise, it would be pretty boring. In the Biggest Loser thing, they craft the drama, but they also have an intense amount of weight loss in a very, very short time. These people are not equipped to learn the true behavioral change because guess what? That takes a long time. That's point one. Point two is this is exactly what we're up against as small steppers because we watch that and it looks amazing. And especially if you're overweight, you look at that and go, that's how fast I want it. But that's fantasy. That's fantasy. That's not reality. And this poor woman was never set up for long-term success. Again, she may have achieved it or somebody else may have. Luck of the draw. For whatever reason of their circumstances, maybe they left that show and they had enough support in their families and friends to keep them doing it long enough to, guess what, like I was just talking about, become that person truly. But short of that, man, life takes over. You're done with the show. You get to all the accolades, blah, blah, blah. You win the money. And then, boom. You're back to your life. You're back to not maybe knowing who you truly are because The Biggest Loser ain't going to tell you who you are. We lose by watching those shows and thinking that that's an expectation, a realistic expectation that we should have about our lives. It breaks my heart when I read that some woman is ashamed and embarrassed when she should have never been in a position of achieving that fast anyway, and it wasn't real, obviously. It breaks my heart that she actually has suffered mental anguish because she gained the weight back. What did you think was going to happen? It would have been an anomaly if she hadn't. It would have been amazing if she hadn't. But instead, we got to go listen to her go on Oprah and talk about how, you know, she's ashamed and didn't want to talk about the fact that she gained the weight back. Sickening. Drives me freaking crazy. My goal here, you guys, you have the power, but you have to understand that it's work. You have to understand for this to work that it is imperative for you to understand the power and strength that you have so that you can implement that change in your life using that power and strength. It is not a short-term 21-day thing. It is not a TV show on freaking Fox. I don't even know what channel that show's on. I don't like it so much. Okay, guys, I'm going to get into this subject, the subject of this week's podcast. The subject of this week is called Make It Suck. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, why would a podcast dedicated to health and happiness have a title that's called Make It Suck? I touched upon this earlier in this episode, and here's why. What I want to talk about this week is intentional sucking. I want to talk about doing something intentionally to make it suck. I want you to think about trying something on purpose to make it suck. Not, I'm going to try this even though I bet it's not going to be good, but just like, I'm going to do this intentionally to make it suck. Here's why. There is a major impediment to people trying new things because they're wrapped up in the quality or the perceived outcome that they think is going to happen. I'm not going to do this because I'm going to be bad at it, or I bet I'm going to be bad at it, or I already know that I'm bad at it. These are the things that prevent us from doing anything. And you know, if you've heard this podcast before, how many times I talk about it is about the action. Well, what I want to talk about this week isn't like, hey man, everybody fails before they succeed. Yeah, that's true. And hey man, don't worry if you fail. Try again. If at first you don't succeed, this is intentionally sucking. This is not try not to worry if you try something new and it sucks. This is this week I want you to actually do something for the sole reason to actually make it suck. If you want to draw a picture because it sounds fun that you've never really drawn stuff or done art, don't just do it going, it's probably not going to be good because I've never really drawn. Do it, go, I'm going to try to make the worst picture that I can possibly make. I'm going to intentionally write a very crappy song. I'm going to intentionally play guitar in the most ridiculous way that it does not sound good. Now, do I think you should do this in front of 1,000 people at the Universal Amphitheater? Of course not. The point about it isn't don't worry if you fail. The point is to actually try to do something bad. Why? Because I want you to experience what it's like to fully be divorced from the outcome of your actions, to be fully immersed in the process, because that is where we draw our strength and our power, which is in the doing. Of course, in reality, in the world, we never are fully divorced. We are always, you know, I didn't jump in as a race director and go, I'm going to make this suck on purpose. And I didn't go into the race thinking, I don't really care if it doesn't suck. I'm just happy that I did it. No, of course, I fully cared. I wanted it to be great. But as an exercise this week, I want you to understand and at least focus your brain on the process. And I think that a powerful way to do that is to try something intentionally bad, but try something that you've never done. Or maybe you used to do a long time ago, and when you did it, by the way, it sucked. So good. That's perfect. I drew when I was 12. I was horrible about it. I was horrible at it, so I never did it again because I was so bad at it. Okay, this is perfect. I'm so sucky. I cannot wait to do this. I'm going to just make it the worst thing in the world. I'm going to draw just the stick figure, and it's not even going to look like it. It's so bad, it's not even going to look like a stick figure. That's what I want to do. Because here's the truth. Unless you're a prodigy, and by the way, if you notice people that we read about that are prodigies, they don't just do it and just never learn, or, you know, children, geniuses, like actual geniuses, they don't just not go to school. They continue to study, they continue to take classes, they continue to research. They're music, you know, musical prodigies, kids that can play violin at age five, that's amazing. They don't stop studying or learning. There's always the process of enhancing and learning and getting better and engaging, because there's all this other stuff that goes into the actions that we bring into the world. One of them is the technicality of a bow across strings, but the other is the feeling and the emotion and the interpretation, the things that, guess what, are representative of us, of who we are. But unless you're a prodigy, pretty much the beginning of anything is going to suck. It's going to be us not doing things well, because that's what it is to start something that you've never done before. You have to learn how it's done. And if you notice that the exception to this is a diet. We start a diet, we're excellent at eating healthy because we're following a list. You're an immediate success when you start a diet. Day one, you're like, I am the person who eats healthy. Look at what I'm eating today. And guess what? Not you. It's not you. You still suck at being a, this is what I brought up before. In a way, you still suck at being a person who eats healthy food every day, because you don't know what that's like to be a person who eats healthy food every day. You only know what it's like to be a person who eats healthy food based on day one of a diet that told you exactly what to eat. The due diligence of this process is learning through maybe a diet, but learning through a program of exercise and eating well and even socializing or whatever. Creative pursuits of how to do this most of the time for the rest of your life. That's the due diligence here. Whatever tools it takes for you to do that are fantastic, but it's never a substitute. Sucking at fitness, sucking at healthy eating. You know, when you're a small stepper, if you start with a stalk of celery on your dinner plate with whatever else you have for dinner, you suck at eating enough healthy food to be healthy. It's not, you're not there. You're not eating enough healthy food to be healthy. I've had clients that I've started literally with, I'm not joking, with a stalk of celery or something raw on their plate. I would never say this, but the fact is they suck at eating healthy food enough to be fully healthy. That's, of course, that's exactly the way it should be, because they're not there yet. They're learning how to be good at that over time. They're practicing that over time. Of course, if you start a musical instrument tomorrow, you're gonna suck at it. This week, I want you to try to suck at it so you can say and see maybe if there's a semblance of enjoyment just in that process of fully liberating yourself from any outcome at all. Of course, that's not realistic. Of course, we have a mind to outcome. Of course, we are wrapped up in the outcome. But what is the proportion of that? How much are you eyeing the outcome versus eyeing the process? Because I've talked to multiple people in my career that, for instance, I tried yoga, but I wasn't really good at it, so I stopped. Good at yoga? That's a lifelong practice. It's a practice. You're good at yoga if you do yoga. That's how that is, because it's a practice. There's no outcome really wrapped up in this. The small steppers ethic is the same way. We are engaged in a lifelong practice of how to live our lives via being a small stepper. My small steps approach is a practice. I've said it 1,000 times. It's a practice. There's no true outcome other than the little bits that you notice. Oh, that was me. I'm more me than I was last year. I'm behaving more myself last year. I'm doing things that I didn't do before. I don't know if I'm good at them or not, or maybe I'm not good at them, don't really care, totally enjoying the process. I'm in a yoga class. I never thought I would do yoga. For me personally, I ran 31 miles last week. I didn't set any, I'm like a super slow runner, It has nothing to do with it. Totally irrelevant. I'm a sucky runner, but doing 31 miles. If I can divorce myself from especially sort of prefab outcomes of what it is to be a good runner, fast or whatever, then I can focus on the fact that I really enjoy running and actually formulate my outcomes that I'm really, really focused on, like being able to run that long. That's kind of the outcome that I really like. kind of the outcome maybe of creative pursuits is that you enjoy drawing and your outcome is that you draw and that's the outcome. And you've divorced yourself from this kind of worldly idea of what good art is or what good music is or what good eating is or what good fitness is. You've got to sort of, not gotta, but try to fully cut yourself off from the outcome and then come back in with more of your brain focused on the process and therefore a little less on the outcome. That goes for weight loss too, doesn't it, you guys? See, weight loss is the ultimate outcome. That's where our focus is when we do these things, is 100% on the outcome. That's the biggest loser. Instead, there's never a mind, especially in the entertainment world, to the process of this. It would be the worst show. I'd like to pitch a show to the network. Okay, I have another option for Biggest Loser. Mine's going to be called Longest Time It Takes to Actually Live as a Healthy Person. So this is going to follow people for 5 years, and it's going to start with a single stalk of celery, and there's really not going to be any drama here at all, and they're going to sort of get to know themselves internally. So a lot of it's just going to be them sort of like looking at a camera but not really talking. So that's kind of what, just kind of leave the camera going. You'll see in their eyes maybe that's why is meeting, oh, meeting's over. Oh, well, anyway, thank you for your time. I hope to hear from you soon. We divorce ourselves from the outcome just enough to realize what the outcome is that we actually want. We divorce ourselves from the outcome just long enough to realize the things that we might enjoy doing in the doing of them. We divorce ourselves from the outcome enough to get more in touch with the how of how we want to live our lives, instead of what we want our lives necessarily to look like to somebody else, but how we actually want to live, the people that we truly are, and how the lives look to us. This is the process. This week, I want you to try that. This is the way that we fight militancy. The militancy happens when we know an outcome or we know a rule and we can't let it go, and we've got to not one drop of oil because I will die. Instead, we get clear on the outcome. We say, I'm going to eat crappy on purpose, junk food, just do it really bad, whatever it takes for you to let go of all these kind of things that we get wrapped up in, then you can re-enter on your terms. We can re-enter on your terms. Go take a yoga class and just be the worst, supposedly, quote unquote, worst yoga person in the world. Just can't even touch your freaking knees. It's so bad. It'll put a smile on your face and you realize, yes, I'm a lot less worried about the outcome and I'm actually able to be aware of that this is kind of a fun class to take. This is kind of cool. Kind of fun to be more aware and in the moment of enjoying the process with less focus on, can I do a freaking handstand today? The more we can enjoy the process, the more we can be present to the struggles, they're less struggling. We struggle less the more present we are to the fact that this is part of what living is. And instead of looking down the line at a scale weight, we get to not waste the 21 days to get to that scale weight. We get to actually learn about ourselves and maybe have joy in those 21 days instead of being hyper-focused on what that's going to look like in 21 days when that's really not an outcome that we're really looking for anyway. We're looking to be happy and we're looking to be healthy, and pretty much that's universal to us as a species. It's what I believe. How we express that, or the things that we go after to deliver us happiness, change in by most people, but we want to be happy. We want to be living lives that bring us joy. That to me is universal. I think some people do that in ways that are a little bit healthier than other ways, but I think that's universal. Make it suck, you guys. This week, I was listening to this podcast, this guy, and he told me to do things really badly. You should listen to his podcast. It's really not uplifting at all. In fact, I'm going to go draw a picture, and it's going to look like a 2-year-old did it, because Sid said that would be a good thing somehow. All right. All right, you guys. You're doing great. Listen, you're doing awesome. You guys are emailing me. I think I emailed everybody back that I was supposed to email. Huh? That was good. I kind of came too. It was like somebody put smelling salts under my nose. I was like, what? Where have I been for the last 3 weeks? And like, oh, we could tell you some stories. All right, you guys. If you want to email me, you would do that via podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. That's podcast@sidgarzahillman.com. That's how you email me. Again, didn't mention it, but if you want to throw me an iTunes review, that would be huge. Donate to the podcast. That's all good stuff. Okay, I appreciate your support. Or just order a mug like that guy in England. Okay, good. Listen, next week, you guys, I will be on my way back from New York, and so I will not be able to not do this podcast. I'm freaking doing the podcast. Why would you doubt me after 137 episodes? I'll be here next week. In the meantime, you guys, be well.
Seeing the time we spent all tucked away, holding a glimpse of falsehood quiet. The streets will always be busy when I can pick out some speck of something that will hold me. But I spent last night looking through a glaze I'm covered on, switching from me to you, from simple to full in a roundabout way. For the most part, I can live between what turns my head. I can stop the story, see what might lie ahead. My eye must simply be bad. So I'm trying to sketch what I'm seeing, but it turns out great. I spent last night looking through a glazer, covered on switching from me to you, from simple to full in a roundabout way. I spent last night looking through a glaze I'm covered on, switching from me to you, from simple to full in a roundabout way. Cause I spent last night looking through a glaze I'm covered on, switching from me to you, from simple to full.